Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans and Sean Desay, back from Winnipeg from Triumph MMA.
Home of the polar bears, I found out.
Home of the polar bears. The show today
all
is
of them?
Yes, every single one of them.
Okay.
Show today is going to start 55 seconds late, which we are told still means we're starting on time. So we will be... George St. No.
Yeah. Okay. I got you.
We will of course talk about George St. Pierre a lot today. A new study out about what 5 years of fighting does to your brain. We'll talk about that plus some other stuff. But since there is no fight and there's no shortage of stories about George St. Pierre, we figured that this week we would start a new segment that we hope gets to continue. It's called This Week in George St. Pierre.
This Week in George St. Pierre.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
I'm afraid of you, man. Are you crazy in your head, man?
Let me tell you something, uneducated.
This Week in George St. Pierre.
All right, so This Week in George St.
Pierre. Sean loves the open.
Dude, this is great.
So this
I
week,
leave for 1 week and look at this,
we
man.
We redo the whole show.
Awesome.
It's like we redecorated the bedroom.
Great.
So This Week in George St. Pierre, there's a lot going on, but the biggest one that we have to start with is what's being called Weightgate. Now, before we start... The gist of this, you need to understand, has nothing to do with Nick Diaz and really has nothing to do with George St. Pierre, as neither one of them did anything wrong. What this has to do is the commission in Quebec, because they are under fire for something that happened 2 weeks ago at the GSP Nick Diaz fight. There was a video that Diaz's camp put up on YouTube twice and was pulled down by the UFC twice for copyright infringement, but it was not really a copyright infringement. What it was a damning display of a commission, in my opinion, ignoring rules that they had set in place to favor the championship fight itself or the champion themselves. And the gist of it is, the video is a employee from the UFC walking over to Diaz's camp and going, hey, want to let you know, Canada doesn't pay any mind to the decimal. And what that means is, in a typical title fight, you have to hit it on the nose. If the title fight is at 155, you got to weigh 155.
Or less.
Or less. 170, 185, 205, etc.
Point zero.
Or, as Ken alluded to, less. In a normal fight at 170, you can weigh in at 171 and still be cleared. That is not true in a title fight. Unless you're in Canada, they apparently don't mind the decimal. So you could be 170.95, and they erase the decimal and say you're 170. Except if you do any sort of research, you can see that there's been a Bernard Hopkins fight in this very same province using this very same commission that was a decimal weight. And there are a number of MMA events that have happened in Quebec that have been weights with a decimal added to them. The UFC events, I think five of the last six in Quebec, they have been no decimals. And if you go back to the very first Quebec one, they only stopped at the half. So it'd be 70.5 right. or whatever. What's fascinating is that if this is a true loophole, as the UFC...
Canadian loophole.
Yes, Canadian loophole, as the UFC employee alludes to, Nick Diaz was informed literally as this all is about to happen, that he not only had another hour to cut weight, which, again, against the commission rules, he could weigh in at up to 170.95 and still clear.
And that's the UFC video that keeps coming. I shouldn't say UFC video. That's the video with a UFC employee that the UFC keeps demanding.
Keeps pulling, yes.
Yeah, come down whenever it happens to pop back up again, because the Diaz camp stopped posting it, obviously, because it's UFC, but you can't fight the internet. Once it's out there, it keeps popping up and popping up. It's on my screen right here. I was just getting the details of the story straight, and oh, look, there's the video again of Nick Diaz talking to that guy. So it's one of those situations where it's very interesting. If they think this video is not going to be anywhere.
Well, and so you've got to ask yourself, what is going on in Canada? And this isn't about, again, not about George St. Pierre. I'm fairly certain that George St. Pierre probably hit weight. Again, if you want to look back at this commission, it's also interesting that this decimal thing comes up. People start digging around. Luke Thomas starts digging around. And one of Luke Thomas's followers, who's another MMA reporter, alluded to the fact that we haven't seen anybody pop in Canada.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
and
point.
And again, not about GSP, not about Nick Diaz, about this commission and whether or not they're doing their actual job. and if there's any sort of legal ramifications. I do not think that 0.9% of a pound of weight would have helped Nick Diaz in this fight at all. What I do think, though, is if we're trying to make this sport into a worldwide phenomenon, there needs to be a unified set of rules so that I know if I fight in Vegas and I need to be 170 and I fight in Quebec, I need to be at 170, not 170.9.
Yeah, I think Nick Diaz, the reason why his attorney or even Nick Diaz himself probably feels this way, because they got hit for a 9-month suspension for what they claim is PEDS, which isn't PEDS, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. The problem is I've dealt with the Quebec commission. I went up there. They have a very, very unusual way of operating up there.
Clearly.
And you know,
what are some of the examples that you noticed as a fighter trainer when you were in Quebec as opposed to when you fight in other places? You were in Winnipeg. Obviously, that's Canada, but that's a different system. You say Quebec is unique
in and
of
itself.
Yeah,
I've been to Montreal. We had two fights last year, and I took both of my teams up there twice.
What was it you noticed?
One thing they will, for example, there was a miscommunication on one of our fights. You know, Jason Riley had an opponent, and we thought we were coming in at 185. So Jason was underweight. He was around 183 or whatever. They said, no, this fight's at 170. We're like, are you kidding me? We never knew this fight was at 170. It was never going to be at 170. If so, Jason can make 170. That wasn't the issue. So we took Jason, and then Quebec said, no matter what, the only way this fight will happen is if they have to be within 5 pounds from each other. So either this guy can go put on some weight and Jason can cut some weight, and as long as they're within 5 pounds. So I was like, well, see what he's willing to do. If he's staying at 70, then we'll go do the best we can, you know, and we did whatever, and then we got penalized 20% of the purse, even though it wasn't our fault. The promoter, by the way,
just to back up, because this connects to this story, was there a fight contract involved in this fight?
Yes, and our fight contract did not state that.
Did it state a weight at all?
It had our 185 weight class.
Okay, so I bring this up because on the fight contract between GSP and Diaz, again, it doesn't allude to the fact that you can weigh in at 170.9.
Well, the funny thing about my story is that the promoter was actually GSP's ex-manager for about 3 or 4 years there, from 2002 to 2007.
Huh.
Make that 5 years.
So somebody who knows the system.
Who knows the system. There's a big article on him on MMA Junkie, and he's actually like, no, I have been dealing with the commission. They are upside down in so many different ways. And his name is Stefan Patry. And Stefan was like, you know, granted, he was like, I don't think GSP did not make weight, or he made weight. That's not the issue.
No.
The issue is I have to deal with this commission as a promoter. And he also did it as a manager of GSP at the time. It was a really weird situation. You know, to make a long story short, Jason ended up fighting the guy. We ended up, you know, it got on. It was good. But we knew, and at that same moment, our guy Kevin Lee was fighting. His opponent was told it was a catchweight at 153. He came in under. Our contract didn't. But the cool thing is, basically my advice is, if you're going up there, if you're fighting for the promotion, the promoter, whatever he has on contract should back it up. So when they thought that they were at 153, when Kevin came in at 155, the promoter was like, you know what, I'm not going to deduct the 20% out of Kevin because he did what he was supposed to do. I'll give you the 20% out of my own pocket. So when you have a promoter who's a stand-up guy like that, that's cool. That's awesome, because no one should get penalized if they're following whatever the contract says.
But don't you think that this is a pretty – while that's an interesting case, it's on a much smaller scale and just brought to light 5 minutes ago. Don't you think it's
the GSP thing? Honestly, Nick Diaz, I don't know why no one from his camp went up to the scale to watch GSP weigh in. Now, that is something that, it doesn't matter, amateur, professional, whatever. Rule of fighting, period. When you're a trainer, you have your assistants, your backup guys. So I have my second guy who's with me, because I'm usually the head trainer. I'll say, hey, listen, you go up there, and when that guy weighs in, you let me know exactly what that number is.
What the underground calls the Joe Rogan. You peer your head around so you can kind of see.
But Joe Rogan makes weird faces. you know what I'm saying? But
185!
But like, I think in this article that we're talking about right now, there's only like a handful of people that really, really knows how much GSP weighed in on that scale moment.
But again, I'm not saying that this is a damning display for George at all. I'm saying that it's very difficult for me to be a practitioner of this sport and a defender of this sport and somebody who loves this sport to know that there's a commission that just can kind of make rules up as they go along.
Yeah, it sucks. You're supposed to trust the commission.
You have to trust the commission.
They're state official appointed people.
Right. So wouldn't you say...
You should be like, hey, if the commission says he's 170.0, cool. You're supposed to believe them. You're supposed to trust them.
And the UFC doesn't want to do this job for those reasons, Eric. They want to make sure that there's no question about it. That, you know, if a fighter goes in there, they're not seeming in favor of one or the other. They want the states to be competent in doing this. They want provinces to be competent in doing this. And when you have a state or a province like Quebec, and we talked about California in the past too, is where things seem to get a little wonky when we're there. Everybody pops. Nobody pops in California
or Canada.
Yeah. Everybody pops in California. So consistency, it's always going to be an issue. You brought up the Bernard Hopkins fight. They've done MMA fights in Quebec. And then you have the UFC come in, and it seems like they ignore it. Coincidence or not, that pretty much every time UFC's in Montreal, who's there fighting?
George St. Pierre.
I'm just saying.
How many of George's last fights were in Montreal? Do we know this number?
The last three I had. I would have to guess. He'll look it up on Wikipedia, I think. But
I know he's all for Olympic testing, which is great. I think that's awesome that he's
fought in Canada 4 out of the last 5 times.
What year was that?
4 years straight in Canada.
4 years.
3 out of 4 in Montreal. Okay. Once in Toronto.
So that's a long time.
That's a
lot. Let's just put it out there. If the commission is not testing for, you know.
Sure it is. It certainly
that's
is.
That's 4 years and, where you can kind of
here's the unfortunate
bulk
part.
Up. You yes. know what I'm saying?
Here's the unfortunate part. You know, obviously Diaz brought that up during this whole process.
Right.
And most of us didn't buy into it. Now when this thing comes out and you see that this commission is kind of wonky and you start asking questions, hey, it's weird that you see in 2013 we've had 6 UFC fighters pop already and it's March. It's weird that this particular place,
right.
nobody seems to pop in the last 6 years. Now, that starts to shed some shadows.
Little Japan.
Well, it starts to shed some shadows on George St. Pierre, which probably aren't fair. We don't have any indication
right.
to show that he's been on anything.
Except what we see with our own eyes. That's it.
Yeah, but you can look at his camps, and Firas Zahabi said it this week. He's only got 2 or 3 more fights he can possibly do because his camp is so ridiculous. And I think there are a number of athletes in the UFC who improved their physique and obviously their skill
sure.
set the correct way and look just as impressive as the guys who are cheating.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think anybody's going to say that John Jones is juicing, right?
No.
Well, and Jones fights in a variety of places. I mean, if we do want to look at this, though, it's been 3 years ago this week. It was the Dan Hardy fight. That's the last time he fought in the United States, and that was in New Jersey. That was in Newark. So,
which is kind of like Canada, right?
Yeah, it's really close.
Is that what you're saying?
No,
Canada South.
I'm saying it's been 3 years.
Yeah,
though,
no,
since,
I see your point.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean Toronto. I don't think anybody's ever had issues with the Ontario Commission. I know you've dealt with them. The Ontario Commission.
I haven't met. No, I just dealt with Mona.
Oh,
whatever.
I thought you took your guys to Windsor before. Okay.
No. I haven't messed with Windsor.
Winnipeg.
I know that. Yeah.
Winnipeg and Montreal.
I know there's a difference between those two. I was just yeah. under the mistaken belief he had gone to Windsor with some of his fighters.
No, I mean we drove through it and whatever, but I haven't done anything in Toronto.
The commission's not. Those are border agents, not.
Yeah.
Athletic Commission guys.
It'll be interesting to see what shakes out with this as it start. To me, it's just starting to bubble up. You're seeing more interviews, more details pop up. So it'll be really interesting what the fallout's going to be for any more fights that end up in Quebec. And as I said, a big week for George St. Pierre. So more George St. Pierre news next. It is Way of the Warrior, brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos and powered by Onnit, online at ONNIT. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WOW Show. It's Way of the Warrior.
Follow our Twitter account at WOW Show.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, Ken Evans, and Sean Desay from Triumph MMA busting out a little ice cube to get you through your weekend of MMA. And as we started in segment one, it is a big week for George St. Pierre, so we continue with our in-depth coverage of this week in George St. Pierre.
This week in George St.
Pierre. I love it.
I'm not impressed by your performance. I'm afraid of you, man. Are you crazy?
Are you crazy?
Let me tell you something, uneducated fool.
This week in George St. Pierre.
All right, so we talked a little bit about Weightgate and whether.
Dude, that's awesome. I'm sorry, man, but that is so great. I love it.
Sean thinks it's karaoke. He just starts singing
along
with George St. Pierre.
It's awesome.
So we talked about Weightgate, and then there's about 700 more new stories about George St. Pierre this week. First and foremost, the Korean Zombie, one of my favorite fighters in all of the UFC, comes after George St. Pierre because of what he wore
what?
In his fight against Nick Diaz. He wore a gi that had the Rising Sun emblem on it, and the Korean Zombie wrote this very nice blog post. The Korean Zombie had written a similar blog post on his Facebook page about a year ago about how fighters should stop wearing this thing. It's totally offensive, and you just need to understand the history of this emblem. It's no different.
War crimes.
Right.
Man.
It's no different than a Nazi swastika, sure. And you need to kind of understand what stuff you're putting on your body. And then George St. Pierre comes out, and the Korean Zombie, handled it perfectly. It didn't get really heated. He didn't call him names or anything. He just said, I expect you to be the champion. I think you're one of the best on the planet, and I need you to be an example to the world. Don't be an uneducated fool. And the response from George St. Pierre and Hayabusa swift and I think awesome.
Quick, yeah.
George said, I was unaware. I'm totally sorry. And Hayabusa says, hey, man, we're not even going to sell it.
Yeah.
You'll never see that again.
This is off the market.
We're totally sorry about that. Might be.
Now, this is an interesting thing, though, to see because he likened it to a Nazi swastika. I don't know if I agree with the Korean Zombie because you can't go to Germany and go to a store and buy a flag with a swastika. It's been outlawed. You can't buy items with swastikas. You can buy a Rising Sun flag. I own a Rising Sun flag. I didn't know there were any issues with it. When I was in Japan, I bought one. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Look at that. That's historical. Again, once I find out and think about what the Korean Zombie says this week, oh, that makes sense what he said. But I think that characterization, while he feels that way, I don't think it's correct in the same sense that when you hear somebody with a Nazi swastika or see somebody with it, they didn't get that from a reputable source. They didn't even get that in Germany where it's outlawed. In Japan, you can go buy these items, and companies like Hayabusa have made items with the Rising Sun on them that have been sold, that have been sponsored by fighters. GSP's been wearing this thing for a couple of years. It's in the Karate Kid. That headband has got a Rising Sun on it. So, I mean, I don't think it's fair to kind of put it at that level when the ability to garner one of these items is so easy. Now, am I going to hang that on the outside of my house now? No. No, not
right.
at all. Is George St. Pierre going to wear it? No.
I think when Korean Zombie did that, I think he, you know, he probably was thinking if I do the swastika, that might give it enough attention for people to, you know.
Well, I mean, it certainly did, but I just felt it was a little unfair because up until that point, nobody had mentioned it. It's almost like, remember when Holzer Reich was in the UFC and somebody had to point out, hey, those are SS symbols
are SS
all over
symbols.
These fighters.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of those guys caught a lot of crap undeservedly. They had a sponsor. They wore the items out. They didn't know there was a secondary meaning. And George St. Pierre, I think, was a big enough fighter and is a big enough superstar to deflect. Probably a ton of criticism there, but I don't know. I just worry when people say things and you immediately associate somebody with Nazism. And that struck me as off, and I didn't really like it that much.
Okay, but don't you think when you're dealing with a guy like George St. Pierre and you're seeing all of these championships being endorsed, or champions, I should say, being endorsed by products like Nike, and this sport is continuing to climb up the hill towards mainstream America, that these are questions that you kind of want to ask, because you won't see a Rising Sun NFL jersey.
Right.
Right?
No, you wouldn't see that. But I mean, here in the United States, we still see rebel flags. And it's just something that's going to happen. Now, obviously, there's not going to be a rebel flag on an NFL uniform anytime soon.
Because it's offensive.
Exactly. Well,
highly offensive, by the way.
And again, and I see why this is offensive, this Rising Sun. I just wanted to make the case that I thought the language was too harsh that he used. I understand.
Sir, you may not attack the Korean Zombie.
I'm not attacking the Korean Zombie. I thought it was a little harsh, the verbiage, and I understand. And, Sean, you make a good point. Maybe that's what you have to throw out there for somebody to take notice. Hey, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this relates to what a Nazi symbol is. And I get that, and I understand the atrocities of war and what happened during that time.
Would a better comparison be to the Iron Cross as opposed to the actual swastika symbol? You know, something that people would just pick up because they think it's cool, as opposed to understanding or seeing a guy with an 8-8 tattoo on him and not knowing that that's the same thing?
The SS?
Yes.
I certainly understand it. And I don't disagree with any of the motives in this situation. I just remember I kind of saw the headline, is George St. Pierre wearing Nazi-like propaganda? What? That's where this went in some of these clicks for tricks headlines you see from websites.
Sure, and there's part of that, Ken, but I think, and I really think we talked about it in segment one, I think all of this fallout from this Diaz fight is going to prove to be, it might not have been worth it to George to take this fight because of all of this stuff he's got to deal with. This, he's got to deal with the rising sun on the key. He's got to deal with the fact that Quebec doesn't really know what they're doing as a commission. He's got to deal with the fact that he told the world he was going to finish this fighter and didn't. So now there's all of this hatred rolling around about.
Now he's got to deal with that one trick pony, Johnny Hendricks.
Then he's got to deal with the guy who can only throw a right hand. We'll see how that works. Whatever. Also this week, his main trainer, Faraz Sahabi, came out with a very interesting story. One that goes back to a story we talked about 2 weeks ago, that George's master plan was three more fights and then I'm done. And Faraz says, look, for those of you who aren't on the inside, and that would be all of us, these camps are ridiculous. Sure. We train all hours of the night, all hours of the day to ridiculous levels, doing ridiculous things, something that a human body cannot sustain.
Right.
So I'm here to tell you that George, and this is Frost speaking, not me, George will probably do 2 to 3 more fights. My guess, Sean, is 2. He's going to fight Hendricks. If he keeps the belt, he's fighting Anderson, and that's all she wrote. Because he's essentially given up on his life to do this. He doesn't do anything else.
What does he do next, though, if he's only got 2 or 3 fights? And I'm sure he's got enough money.
I have the answer for you.
Okay.
It's part of our long-storied coverage of this week in George St. Pierre.
If it has anything to do with taking acting lessons with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And in fact, it does.
He's just been
signed to be the main villain in the second Captain America movie.
What?
Yes. He is going to be, what is this crazy
that
guy's
French
name?
Dude,
that crazy French dude.
That sounds like a perfect character for him.
It looks just like a pro.
You will not like me, Captain America. I will lie on you and take all your will.
Did you see Tommy Tuchel today?
Yes.
That was awesome. He's going to lie on him for 98 minutes of the movie.
He's going to be the villain, Batroc the Leaper.
Leper.
He's a mercenary and master of the French form of kickboxing known as savate.
Now, this is bunch of BS. Stand up? No. I would accept a lot. There's a lot I'm going to accept.
So you're saying when he leaves UFC, we're actually going
to
start seeing welterweight championship fight finishes?
And we're going to see George St. Pierre in stand up.
Scripted finishes, yes. And George St. Pierre standing up.
I'm talking about in the UFC, man.
Well, you'll probably see finishes in the welterweight division. Yeah,
sweet. He's a leaper, by the way.
Leaper?
Yeah, it's leaper.
Okay, I don't know.
Leper would be scary. You wouldn't even need to.
Leopard's a really scary supervillain.
Be good at striking. You just kind of got a touch.
Look, truth be told, never much of a Captain America comic book fan. Was not one I ever got into. So leaper, leper, I would have no idea. So.
He was kind of boring, huh? The only thing that was cool, when you were a kid, he had a motorcycle.
He had a motorcycle.
That was cool.
He had a shield. And I mean,
I didn't care for the shield.
This supervillain doesn't even have any superpowers.
Here's the new tagline. You thought Captain America was boring before. Now welcome George St. Pierre to the franchise.
Marvel, if you're listening.
So you're saying the villain has no superpowers?
No, he's just super athletic.
He's just a savate guy out there.
He's George St. Pierre.
I train very hard to be a super villain, and I will be very felonious to you. And
if he has no superpowers.
All of your ignorant superhero friends, you ignorant fools, cannot stop my leap.
So he jumps from building to building with flying ninja kicks.
I leap. That's what I do. I leap.
New rule on the show: you may never.
You sound like a little leprechaun now.
I leap.
You may never interrupt
a Mexican leprechaun.
George St. Pierre impersonation.
I will leap on you. Interrupt me again.
Now you sound more like the guy from Napoleon Dynamite.
Whatever.
You sound like Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite. Okay, and then last bit of George St. Pierre news, which blew up on your Facebook through our Facebook, which is that Ben Askren from Bellator has challenged UFC president Dana White. He said at the next fan expo, he wants to wrestle St. Pierre for $1,000 per takedown.
Do you know why? Because he'll never get a UFC fight, and this is the closest thing he'll ever get.
First off, thank you, Joe Lozon, for ruining the world for everybody. Now that everyone thinks that they could just do their thing against somebody else, and Dana will pay them for it. And he said he's willing to give White, a known gambler, 3-to-1 odds and got no response. Said maybe I'll up it to 5-to-1. Maybe he'll think that's fair.
There's no strength like retard strength. So I'm going to have to give it to Ben on this one. I think Ben will win.
I don't. First of all, it will never happen.
No, this is never going to happen. This is never going to happen. This is never going to happen. There's
if
no
I was
reason.
GSP, I would write. I'll tweet him when I have time from my movie business career.
No, here's
maybe.
The thing. No, here's the thing. You don't pee down, so to speak, in any business.
Don't. You know,
and the UFC is not going to acknowledge that anything else even exists, so they're not going to take a bet from Ben Askren, who I have to Google every time we start talking
about. I know, right? And when you look at
it,
he looks a little downsy. Tell me the truth.
All right, and we'll talk about Down syndrome here in the next segment. But
thank you, Sean.
Yeah, thank you for the segment. Sorry. However,
he does.
I would think, Ken, we talked about it last week, it would be more likely to see the CM Punk, Vince McMahon, Dana White, Chael Sonnen
happen
in the WWE.
I'm in for
of
that.
Of course
yeah.
you would. That would be more likely to happen than Ben Askren being at a fan expo wrestling George St. Pierre for $1,000 per takedown.
That's so ridiculous. This isn't. If Sean didn't bring it up, we wouldn't have even paid attention to it.
I was trying to bring it up to one of my fellow wrestlers. Yeah. I didn't know it was going to get attention like this.
I find it interesting, but there's no way he's ever going to get a response.
And Ken, the only reason I brought it up is because when I watched it happen on Sean's Facebook page, the ridiculous responses as if Ben Askren invented wrestling,
right?
So that nobody could ever possibly threaten his wrestling prowess. And that B, if the fight then transitions to a stand-up war, George St. Pierre would knock his head off his shoulders. And I don't have facts to back either one of those things up because I've never seen it happen from either guy.
All right.
So yeah. That's why I brought it up, because I don't think either one of them are.
It is pretty comical. It's funny. I enjoyed it. So
I would much rather leap against you than do takedown war.
I love it.
Let us jump.
holding hands.
All right. Okay, when we come back, a new kind of shocking study on mixed martial arts and boxing and the damage it does to your brain after just 5 years of fighting. And then we talk a little bit about Garrick Holvey. There was a story on ESPN that got a lot of people talking, and I think a little bit of hindsight when you look at this, it might not be as inspirational as you think it is. Way of the Warrior on Twitter and Facebook. Search WOW Show.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, Ken Evans, and Sean Desay from Triumph MMA. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at WOW Show, brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos and Onnit Supplements online at ONNIT. And this week we joined the Fight Fans Radio Network, so a big shout out to those guys for carrying the show. Thank you for doing that. And as I alluded to, there were two stories that I found interesting this week that I wanted to touch on. One was a study about the effects of pro fighting on the brain. And this study studied a whole bunch of fighters in Vegas, because obviously it's the fight capital of the world. The median age of these fighters was 28 years old, so they've been doing it for a minute. And on average, these fighters had 11 fights. So after 11 fights, or as they showed in the study, 5 years, you can see significant cognitive damage to the brain. Now, this is one study. So we don't need to throw.
What kind of, what style of fighting are we talking about on this one?
So it was a combination of, I don't have a number of which, but I do. 104 boxers, 135 MMA fighters.
Here's the problem, and I've seen these numbers now. We don't really have a differentiation in this study, which I find interesting, that I've been able to find. Have you been able to find one that says
that
MMA
them?
Versus the, because these are, we've made this argument 100 times. These are entirely different sports when it comes to the significant injury on the brain.
Consecutive blows to the head. Well,
again and again and again. Right. Concussive blows on top of concussive blows happen in boxing every single fight. In MMA, a guy gets his bell rung, he's about to get KO'd or finished, and that's it. Fight's over.
Yeah. It's like when you bump your head snowboarding.
You don't get a standing 8 count in MMA.
Sure, and that's certainly something you need to weigh into studies like this, because it breaks out how many people are in the study, but then throws all the results in together. And anybody who knows the fight game knows that the damage your brain takes in boxing is much different than the damage your brain takes in MMA. That's not to say that MMA isn't dangerous for your head.
Right, right.
There's only...
Anytime you're taking a shot to the head, it's dangerous.
You know, my favorite is when you listen to Rogan, when he talks about this, and he does extensive conversations about your brain, and he talks mostly about the front plate of your skull.
Right.
And that in his brain, and I think it makes sense, that part of your head only has X amount of shots it can take over a lifetime before you start actually doing damage to your brain. So the more you're getting pounded in the dome, obviously the worse off it is. But what's fascinating is if you could break this out and we could make a more compelling argument, if you have 15 years of experience or more, you've got your brain shrinks by over 12% from the
trouble,
damage.
I'm in
trouble,
man.
You are. You are.
Ouch.
You're in trouble, but I mean, I think, like Eric said, this is not an unexpected result, so to speak.
No.
And here's the problem, and I guarantee they did this, because you need to kind of get to a sample size above 200 before anything makes any sense. They only had 135 mixed martial artists. So you throw in 104 boxers, you've got guys throwing things way off. Because look at a guy like Randy Couture, who's been wrestling and fighting all his life. Look at a guy who's the same age, who's been boxing all his life. You're going to see a big difference.
Sure.
This is I'm not a doctor. I'm a layman.
Sure.
But I'm going to look at those two dudes, and I'm going to see a big freaking difference between what that guy at 45 who's fought MMA and that guy who's boxed at 45 looks like in boxing. And the results are something I think we need to heed. Like you said, Eric, it's kind of the first thing we've seen, even with any MMA fighters, because it's a relatively young sport. But until we can get these numbers broken out, and I think that's interesting that that they haven't done that yet, it's kind of hard to tell. And they really can't do it and have a real statistical probability. I know you're great at statistics, Eric. You did part of your college thesis running statistics through algorithms and things like that. You can't get a real probability with that small a sample, right?
Not only with that small a sample, but when you don't actually differentiate between the violence done to the head. The reason I bring this study up, though, is to start the conversation, because earlier this week, I saw the story on ESPN, and I posted it on our Facebook page at WOW Show, of Garrett Holvey. He is a kid with Down syndrome that trains at ATT. And
American Top Team, American for top you guys team. Don't know. Right.
And ESPN follows him through some training and follows him to a fight where he fights a guy who
That's the one with Stephen Bonner in his corner
with
and stuff.
Stephen Bonner's in his corner, and they follow him to this fight where they find a guy who will actually fight him.
He punched him square in the face pretty hard, too.
And so the reason I'm telling you this is, while it's an inspiring story that you can do anything if you put your mind to it, when you look at a study like this and you take somebody who's already dealing with a lower cognitive ability because of their Down syndrome, do you really want your son, your daughter, somebody you know who has Down syndrome in a sport that specializes in blows to the head? Now, as inspirational as this video was, and I was choked up because you just see this kid who wants it so bad, and he gets in there and he performs in that final round, and it was a Rudy story, a Karate Kid story, however you want.
The part that got me is when he said, "I did it, Baga, I did it," and Baga was his coach, and I was like, "Wow, that's pretty touching."
But I look at this study, and now that scares me to death.
Well, and I think it's interesting, Eric, because I kind of looked at that whole story like that, and it's a touching story, and it's one as a parent you feel. But I've got a little boy, and Eric's got a little girl, and I know in that situation I've already been thinking about, what is my son going to do when it comes to football? Because the NFL is trying to address issues so that it is not gone in 100 years.
Because college football is biggest is where it's
well,
most of the damage is getting
well,
done.
Well, NFL's
right?
bad too. I mean, all football's bad.
Sure.
So then I think about that. I'd much rather let my son participate in MMA. Would I ever let him box? I don't think so. When I think about these situations, so I kind of saw this, and I'm already thinking that I'm like, I know it's MMA, and if you want to put that triangle together of football and MMA and boxing, I'm going to say MMA's safest 100 times out of 100.
Yep, I would agree.
Out of those three sports, but it's still not what you'd call a safe sport. It's not a non-contact sport, and I saw that situation, and I was kind of put off by it. And then there was the reaction afterwards. There was a lot of heat on ESPN for that. And then you see a study like this where you know that there's a real research behind it. It's not surprising to any of us, but it's a situation where I don't know. I get that the kid wants to do that. He's 23. He's he's got Down syndrome. He's essentially still living on his parents' means.
Yep.
And they want to do. They want to be proud. And it's a moving, a happy ending. But what happens to this guy in 10 years? He's still in their training.
Right.
It took him a long time to find a fight for a reason. That should have been a clue. And it bothered me a little bit. I'm not saying I'm glad to see the reaction, but I'm glad other people feel similarly to me that maybe this isn't all, the ESPN trumpets and score underneath and all's good in the end kind of story that it initially was kind of produced as.
Well, and I think when you watch it, just like when you watch any of this stuff, it's designed to give you that feeling, Ken. And I had that feeling until you step away from it from a day, and then you go, well, we're already dealing with somebody who's got damage to the head.
Right.
In a sport that specializes in damage to the head. How much can somebody who's got Down syndrome, and you know, with him, he was highly functional.
Yeah, he was.
He was doing his thing. He was training. He's teaching kids. He's doing. It was something that you would want him to remain that cognitive. And blows to the head are not going to do that.
I would say, as a parent, you know, going, if you want your child to get in any kind of like self defense, I think jiu-jitsu is probably going to be your safest route. There's zero blows to the head.
Yep.
It's a great self-defense system, and you know it could be like a gateway to other things like MMA or kickboxing, whatever. But I mean, you're gonna learn some great self-defense techniques through jiu-jitsu, and I mean, yeah, you might hyperextend your arm here and there, but what little kid doesn't these days? Or roll your ankle, big deal. But as far as like we're talking about brain damage, you know, did this study say that it between the MMA fighters and boxers that the results are the same? Is that what that study said?
No, it didn't. But that's what we were talking about. Okay. It hasn't broken them out. What I thought was
we don't have the results on it. Okay,
what I thought was fascinating is
we have a cumulative result of a big pool of fighters from MMA and boxing.
Right.
And the numbers don't work as far as the sample size if you actually break those down, because it's 110 to 120,
right,
essentially.
Right. Okay.
So, but what I found fascinating is that one of the parts of the brain that takes the biggest damage and shrinks in volume the most is the amygdala. And if you don't know what the amygdala is, it is responsible for your fight or flight mechanism. Mm. And what happens to a human who doesn't possess such thing, or has a smaller version, or somebody who has Down syndrome, who has a smaller one to start out with, takes and ups damage and their amygdala is essentially not there? I mean, do they just lack the ability to understand that they're in danger, and how dangerous is that to somebody?
Well, especially when they're fighting. Let's take it out of the very real possibilities in the real world that you don't recognize that you're in a dangerous situation.
Sure.
Let's simply put it in the fighting cage and realize that there are situations where a fighter knows when he's done. I mean, you know, there's never any shame to tapping if you know you can't win that fight.
You saw it 2 weeks ago in Tough. They wanted to go to a third round. That guy was like, nope, I'm done.
No, he knew.
And Dana White was like, are you kidding me? He's like, dude, if the guy's done, he's done.
And the guy knew he was done. Well, the problem is that fight or flight is broken, essentially. And
right. That's
what we're going to break it down to in this point. Guy's not going to know he's done. So if he's a tough-as-hell dude, then he's getting beat on mercilessly, or he's not tapping.
And worst-case scenario, I hate to bring it up, guys, but death in a cage, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about it, but
nobody
kind of goes in that direction if you don't know the difference.
But I guess to kind of wrap this up, it was interesting, Ken, to see how much people were into it on Monday, and then we all kind of had this visceral next-day reaction. And then you couple it with a story like this where you're seeing this study of close to 300 fighters who are all suffering from brain damage after only 11 fights and just over 5 years of damage to the head. Now, again, a cautionary tale, as we said, don't run away from this segment thinking that fighting is bad for you, because I can't break the sample size up to tell you the difference. And there's a big difference between MMA and boxing.
Of course.
Do your own research. Find another study. It is only one study. I brought it up because I think it's an interesting talking point to talk about Garrett. And something to bear in mind as this sport gets bigger. And the NFL, you see the fallout, and it's 2013, and we're seeing some fallout from the damage you take to the brain from running your helmet into another helmet.
Yeah, we're seeing the biggest sport in the world be affected by this. So it's
but
not
60
a unique,
years later is
yeah.
what I'm saying.
Oh, it's not a unique situation by any means. And the fighters and the breakdown and all that, we can argue about that. And even if they were able to break it down, you've got one study. How many guys are cross-training as they train? They do boxing and all this. So, again, how much weight do you want to lend to this? Not sure, but if you want to be one of those people with your head in the sand and you don't want to look at these things, it can be very dangerous for you and probably, more importantly, your students, if you're a teacher mm-hmm. in a class, or if you're a trainer, your fighters, or even your children as you move along in life.
I would say if you really need to know an answer, spar round of boxing, spar round of MMA. You might find your answer there.
Yeah, you certainly will. All right, when we come back, MMA news. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Search WOW Show. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.